This is Goals with Soul, the podcast for visionary coaches and entrepreneurs building your business with inspired action. In alignment with your mission and authentic message, so you can create impact for your soul clients and feel lit up every day. I'm your host, Jo Ingram, married mum of three daughters from London and a former ad agency director turned business coach and strategist. In Goals with Soul, we blend revenue generation with energetics, marketing strategies with pranic healing, and ambitious business goals with our soul's desires. If you're looking to build your business with less efforting and more ease, this is the podcast for you. Let's dive in. Welcome to Goals with Soul. I'm Joanna Ingram, and today we're talking about people pleasing. Now, I've got to be completely transparent first off. I'd never really identified as a people pleaser per se. And I think that if you've got some opinions and you've held down a big corporate job and you've spoken out in various situations, you think, no, you know, I hold my own. How could I possibly be a people pleaser? But our guest today is going to perhaps challenge your view if you've thought the same as me. I know that as we started speaking, Amy made it so clear that people pleasing is actually something that in business and in life, so many of us are walking around with inherent symptoms of people pleasing that can be solved in ways that she's going to share that I know will blow your mind just as much as they blew my mind. My guest today is Amy Green-Smith. She's a life coach, hypnotherapist and speaker and all-round self-proclaimed badass who specializes in teaching chronic people pleasers and perfectionists how to speak up for themselves without being dicks. So you can finally feel like enough, create some serious self-confidence and fall in love with you. Amy shares some amazing do it now ideas on how to have difficult conversations. And listen right through to the end for the inspired action that Amy shares. You are going to want to do this today. So let's dive in. Hello, Amy, and welcome to Goals with Soul.
Oh, thanks, Joe. I'm excited to hang out.
Right. This is going to be an epic show because I've had some conversations recently with clients and with friends, and the idea of people pleasing keeps cropping up. Like this idea of why can't I just say what I want to say? And why do I always feel like I have to? And this obligation idea. And I know that you're going to share some outstanding ideas about how to deal with this. But before we dive in, I'd just love to know, what's your definition of people pleasing? Because I was debating whether I'm even a people pleaser or not. And I want to know, please share.
Well, I'm very glad that we started with this because something that I have found in my work is that it similar to the lovely folks who listen to the show, if you are a high achiever, if you tend towards perfectionist tendencies, we oftentimes have a connotation of a people pleaser as someone who is really weak. Maybe even their posture is a little bit more retracted, and you think of them as being shy, maybe introverted, and that's really not the case. I put people pleasers in a category of anytime you are twisting or contorting yourself in order to make other people happy when it's at a cost to self. So essentially, anytime there's a high investment in what other people think, so much so that you alter your behavior in a way that's not authentic, which we all do, right? Like if we feel like we can't be seen without makeup at the grocery store, that's a little bit of people pleasing, right? It's like I'm sacrificing my comfort because I'm concerned about what other people are thinking. If I am afraid to put myself out there on Instagram, right? If I am afraid to start my YouTube channel or podcast because of what other people might be perceiving, that's an element of I'm sacrificing something because I'm afraid of what other people will think. And the thing that I think is really important to understand about people pleasing too is that it's very nuanced. It's not necessarily something that's always bad. The same way perfectionism is not always bad. If I'm going in for brain surgery, I sure as fuck want that person to be a perfectionist, right? Like there is not room for error. And people pleasing is an iteration of our fawn response. You know, like it, we talk about fight, flight, freeze. Fawn is if you were to kind of placate an aggressor in order to stay safe. All of those behavioral tactics have modern iterations. The modern iteration of fawning to stay safe is people pleasing. So for many of us, if you're listening and you identify as a woman, we've had many situations where we've probably had to people please, typically men, in order to stay safe, right? Like not causing a ruckus just so that you can get to your car safely, right? So there are times when people pleasing genuinely keeps us safe. And I would also say that a majority of folks who know that that's a behavior that we tend toward can usually see it in our families of origin or in our childhood. You know, if you grew up with a very volatile caregiver, you might have learned that flying under the radar, not nothing to see here, walking on eggshells, it allowed you to stay safe and avoid outbursts or abuse. So there's a lot of nuance in there that I think is important to understand. But essentially, if you are highly invested in the opinions of other people, there's a chance that there's some people pleasing going on there that's detrimental.
Yeah. And the way you describe that so colorfully, you can really see yourself in each of those examples. And it makes me wonder, was that your history? Was that how you became someone so interested and then such an expert in people pleasing specifically?
Oh, no, I came out of the womb just able to talk, speak up for myself. No, I definitely had a lot of challenges myself. And, you know, my story is that I grew up in a very conservative, born again, evangelical family. And my father had a master's in divinity and a doctorate in ministry. So he was not fucking around. And, you know, for a bit of context, I had two younger siblings and I was by all accounts, the good kid. And, you know, started working when I was 14, put myself through college, got married young, moved out of the house, and kind of juxtaposed against my siblings who both did jail time, had trouble with the law, didn't go to school, all of that. And everything kind of came to a head when my father passed in 07. And prior to that, whenever we would visit my family, I would always kind of tell my partner, okay, no cussing, no liberal agenda, no talking about South Park, no John Stewart, like all the stuff that I knew they would find highly, highly offensive. And I had a background in makeup artistry. So I knew when my father passed that I wanted to do his makeup for his viewing, like at the service. Mm. So yes, this is the portion of the show where I talk about dead dad makeup. And I also spoke to a crowd of like hundreds of people who were there for the service. We get back home to my mom's house and I had felt like I had really wanted daughter that day. You know, I'm doing dead dad makeup. I'm doing, you know, speaking to people in a really grief stricken time. So she finds it the most opportune time to say that it feels as though your father and I have failed as parents because the three of us, grouping myself in with my two siblings who were not winning at child, I didn't think. And, you know, because the three of you are not, quote, walking with the Lord, that we weren't subscribed to the religious traditions that we were raised in. And that was a very pivotal moment for me because I still don't feel that a majority of speaking up for ourselves is ultimatum status. I think that's sort of where we end up if we don't speak up. But I realized in that moment, if it did reach that ultimatum of I need to either decide to make her happy or I decide to live authentically and make me happy, I'm going to choose me. And that was really the first time I had done that. Prior to that, it was all the shape shifting and the veneers going up. And you know, and still, I don't speak up with her to cause pain or malice, but I do take up spiritual space because I believe that I matter and that I'm valuable and that I'm worthy. But I also believe that she is too. So the trajectory after that, though, let me tell you, I was combative and adversarial, and I wanted to fight about everything. It was sort of like the floodgates had opened. And it wasn't until I had to clean up many messes that I realized, oh, you can actually speak up for yourself. You can give voice to things that you feel completely polarized around with someone else, and you can do it with grace and kindness. So there were many instances where I had to go back to her and say, hey, listen, I should have never spoken to you in that way. I still feel very strongly about what we discussed. So I started the process of not taking back my stances, opinions, or beliefs, but I did take back my delivery. And I started working on my delivery, which is one of the hardest elements of the communication process. Because we think it's either total acquiescing, sweeping everything under the rug, or you come at people like a bat out of hell. Like, we don't look at the middle road, which is truly what I teach now, is how to effectively speak up for yourself in situations that are really terrifying. You know, how do you ask an adult child to move out of the house? Or how do you sever a business partnership? Or tell a member of your team, like, I don't think this is working out, right? Like, how do you have those really difficult conversations in a way that is both assertive and standing in your power, but then also kind and who you want to be in this world? And a lot of that comes down to reckoning with your perspective around people pleasing and your own sense of self-worth too.
Yeah.
I had to learn the hard way.
And as you talked about some of those examples, I was just like feeling into it. And I'm like, whoa, nervous system dysregulation. It's just like the absolute physical response that comes from this idea of telling a team member they're underperforming when you're the boss and it's your business. I mean, I had to do that many times when I worked for corporate, and I never liked it, but I had no choice in the matter. And it's interesting now when you're running your own business and you have the choice in the conversations you have, I can see how easy it must be to let things go way longer than they should. And just because you don't want to have that confrontational conversation, because
that's right,
you perceive the fact that now there's going to be difficult words and you've got to stay in a calm demeanor. So how do you tackle something like that?
Well, I think first of all, the fact that you are highlighting the emotional response that we go through that is so directly tied with the physical response, there's a very real reason for that. So we are wired as humans to be constantly scanning for threat. So if we feel like a difficult conversation is on the horizon, that registers to the brain as threat, right? Like, oh my gosh, send in the fear responses. Well, we can either fight, we can flee, we can freeze, do nothing, or we can fawn, try to placate that other person. So I think there's a part in understanding that biologically, this is not because you're a wuss or because you don't want to speak up. It's because it feels like it's a sense of threat, and we are always going to want to avoid that. Even if we look at like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for example, one of our primitive human needs is for one of belonging. So that means, you know, like if we're looking at our ancestors, there was no tribe of one. They had to belong to an organized group in order to survive. So that means now if we feel like our in-laws don't like us, or a team member is not liking us, or someone's talking shit to us on LinkedIn or Instagram or whatever, we register that as like, I might not survive this. Send in all the defense mechanisms, right? So what do we do with that? I think the first place that we have to start looking at is, where do I tend to people please when it's not in service of me, right? The first item of business I think we have to always look at is, am I physically safe? So the example that I'll use frequently is, and I identify as queer. So if I am amongst a bunch of folks who are clearly anti-LGBTQIA, that's probably a time when people pleasing will keep me safe, right? that's probably not the time to wave the rainbow banner and like get in people's faces. It's like my physical safety might be threatened. So your first kind of rubric is to check in and go, am I physically safe? Because there are some relationships. I see this mostly in intimate partnership, not as much in business relationships, but it does happen where you are actually not safe with that person. So calling in effective communication tactics don't work in the face of abuse. So I always have to kind of throw that out as a disclaimer, because the last thing we need are a bunch of women thinking, if only I can communicate better, then some of these folks who are really not healthy for me will magically change. And that's not necessarily the case. Then if you've determined that, then I want you to think about who are the people in your life that you chronically and consistently complain about, but you complain about them to the wrong person. So it could be, let's say you have maybe it's somebody on your team. Maybe it's a business partnership that you have and you are so frustrated with them. So your mastermind gets an earful about how frustrated you are, or your therapist or your partner gets an earful about how much you can't stand this person. What do I do? And and we do this a lot with familial relationships, like, oh, my mom's driving me crazy. So we talk to the therapist, but we don't actually talk to mom. So if it's worth complaining about, it's probably worth taking action on. And it's not necessarily about just venting or purging something like a rough day. I'm talking about habitual behavior from someone that has bothered you and you have not given voice to it. I like to say you need to at least give people the opportunity to be what you need. If they haven't been given the opportunity because you haven't been explicit about that, that's on you. That's for you to, it's not just them doing insidious behavior. It could be that they, high achievers out there, they might think that you just genuinely like doing all the work or taking it on or being, it has to be a specific way. So we have to think about like, what information does that other person have? Have I given them all of the information that they need in order to genuinely be what I'm asking? So that's definitely the key first piece. And I would actually kind of flip-flop those two questions. I would first look at who do I chronically complain about? And then I would look at, is it safe to speak up with them? Because there are some situations, if you're transitioning, let's say, like if you're in a corporate environment, some situations, depending on the nature of the organization, it's not safe to speak up because you will be fired, right? Like depending on, so it depends what is the most important thing to you in those moments. But those would be like the places to start. And then we would go into the actual conversation or the actual boundary or what that would sound like, which we can certainly discuss wherever you want to go.
Well, the first thing that comes to me about this is the how. And you probably get this all the time. So people come along, they're like, I get it. Yeah, I'm all fired up. I know it needs to be done. And then it's the implementation. It's like, well, what do I say? And how much pushback do I take? And like, yeah. At what point do I have to be firm, or can I be really gentle? And is there any sort of common denominators or things that you've seen in practice that tend to work in these sorts of conversations?
Yes. Oh gosh, I can give you a ton of hacks. First hack is ask for the time to talk. No one wants to be caught off guard. So if I came to you, Joe, and I was like, Joe, we need to talk, and you had no idea, and I said it like that, it would be, oh, okay, what about? What about? And you tend to get people in their defense mode, right? So they're going to do fight, flight, freeze, fawn, instead of what we usually want, which is authenticity. So if we get conversation consent, you can set yourself up for success so much faster. So I suggest using wording like, hey, Joe, there's a handful of things I'd love to get your opinion on. or I'd love to run some stuff by you. Do you have some time maybe in the next couple of weeks? And if that person says, hey, sure, what's it regarding? Tell them, say like, you know, I've been a little unsettled about some of the stuff that's been happening in our business arrangement. And I would just really like to get some clarity on it. I'd love to get your thoughts. And because if you have to think about if you're in that situation and someone's just like, we need to talk, when can you talk? And you're like, what is this about? And then it's agonizing for like 3 days. Give people the same courtesy that you would want. And you can always say things like, I'd really love to give you time to think. I would love to give it the space it deserves. So we certainly don't need to get into it right now. But I would love to give you the heads up on.
How does that look like if it's your mother or your sister or your bestie, for example?
Yeah, that's a great question. It looks exactly the same. In fact, I just said that to my husband the other day. I said, hey, I'd really like to get your thoughts on something, or I'd really like to run some stuff by you. And it was just as easy. So it depends on, again, the relationship and how volatile things are. You know, I've worked with students that their mom is always inebriated, always intoxicated. And so one of the boundaries is, I will not continue to have a conversation with you unless you are sober. And that becomes what I call talking about the conversational container. So often we get caught up in the content of what we're arguing about instead of if the container is conducive to a healthy conversation. So what I mean by that is if any point someone in your life starts to say, you always do this, and starts getting, you know, kind of combative and volatile, that's where you don't argue the content. You don't say, no, I'm not. Well, I wouldn't do this if you didn't have to do that. Well, that doesn't, don't argue the content. Say, I'm happy to continue this conversation, but it feels as though tensions are escalating. Maybe we should press pause. Or I'm happy to discuss this with you, but not if you continue to speak to me in that manner. So we're addressing the container. We're not addressing who was right or wrong or what makes sense or doesn't. But so often when we feel attacked, we want to defend. So you have to get used to that. So I'll give you an example with my brother. He wanted to talk about like gun rights. We are very much on different sides of the aisle with that. And he wants to go on and on and on about guns. And so I said, hey, listen, I don't have that. I don't share that same opinion, but it's not something I want to get into, because we were going to like a family dinner out at a restaurant, and he's chasing me as we're going into the restaurant, wanting to talk. Well, what about this? Well, what about this legislation? Or does this make sense? And I had to repeat, I'm happy to discuss this with you, but not right now. This is not the time. So instead of replying, I just kept saying this container is not conducive. One other hack that I love is trying to eliminate the word you. So if I say to you something like, Joe, you keep doing the same thing, or you keep sending these emails in this way, that feels so much more like an attack than if I said, hey, listen, I think there might be some disruption in how we're communicating. So if we can eliminate that, or as tensions get high, instead of saying, it seems like you're getting really upset or you're getting really angry, to say like, hey, I think things might've derailed a little bit. Maybe we need to take some time, right? So you're not, it's just a small little tweak to start working with that you. Another thing that I would say as a really great hack, and this one is one of the most difficult to embody, and it depends on how close you are with that person and what the relationship is like, but is to use vulnerability. And one of the easiest ways to use vulnerability is to say, hey, listen, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to talk. Using gratitude is always awesome. Or, hey, I know this has always kind of gone awry every time we talk about this, so I just really appreciate you sitting down with me. There have been some things that have been on my mind, and I've been finding myself getting more and more angry and resentful. And I realized that was wildly unfair to you, because you probably had no idea why. And if the situation was reversed, I would certainly want the courtesy of being looped in on that. So you're owning your shit. Most of the time, it's not that you need to change your stance. It's that you need to change your delivery. It's how you converse about it. And most of the time, what we have to own is the fact that we've never been explicit, or when we have conversed about it, we've yelled and screamed. And that's not effective communication. That other person never thinks, wow, I can't wait to work on that for you. They're like, let me get away from this crazy person who's yelling and ranting and raving. So you have to acknowledge your piece in the matter. And most of the time, it's either how you've said something or that you've never said anything at all. And those two pieces, vulnerably owning that at the beginning, can create a completely different trajectory. We have mirror neurons in the brain where we will naturally mimic human emotion. It's called emotional contagion. So we can kind of like catch emotions from folks. So if you sit down in a conversation and you're all armored up and ready to do battle, like, yeah, so I want to run some stuff by you. And I think that how you've been handling things is that, like, naturally that other person is going to want to mirror that same kind of combative adversarial tone. But if you start softly and gently get into it and just own your piece, like, hey, this has really been bothering me. And this is unfair for me to think of you as a mind reader. Like, how would you know? It's not foolproof, but you're more likely to elicit that same vulnerability. And I've seen it with my mom. I've seen it in a completely obvious way of the change and shift in her when I show up in a softer way. And everybody, what we all want is just to be heard. So you have to ask yourself, like, am I communicating in a way where that other person can easily hear me?
I love how you're putting that, Amy. I mean, a lot of the way you're saying it, I'm thinking, yes, obvious, but it wasn't obvious until you said it. But I mean, that could change so many conversations. And the thing that comes to me in this, I'm like, once you have got these skills, and I imagine maybe someone listening right now is thinking the same as me, which is like, I could think of a couple of conversations I want to have right now, and I'm going to use this opener right away. Is being discerning about which conversations to have and which ones to let go. Mm. And I think, you know, if someone's in people-pleasing mode and has been for decades, they're going to have not had a lot of conversations. And then suddenly they're like, okay, I'm identifying as people-pleaser and I get it. And I need to be more assertive and I need to care for myself and have boundaries. But how do you make the decision that this needs a conversation? And actually, that's just part of society and living within a family, and perhaps you should just let it go. And where do you draw the line, and how do you make personal distinctions about what things to tackle and what things to kind of let go? This idea of losing the battle and winning the war, or, you know, just picking your battles, lots and lots of war type language. But, you know, that idea of which things to care about and which things to manage internally. And it's more of a me thing and not a you thing.
Well, you're probably not going to like my answer. because this too is quite nuanced. And so it has everything to do with the specific situation. But I'll give you a little compass that I use. I operate under a mantra of, do not allow your silence to make you a liar. So what I mean by that is, I will not stay silent if A, I'm safe, I'm physically safe, right? That's always, we always need to make sure that that's there. And if B, it's something that matters enough to me that my silence making me complicit would be out of integrity. I'll give you an example. Many years ago, I was doing community theater, and there was a gentleman who showed me a meme on his phone that was incredibly offensive and disparaging to a mentally and physically disabled child. And to me, that's not comedy and not something that I'm going to subscribe to. So he's showing it to me, but he's doing it in that kind of colluding way of like, oh my gosh, check this out. Isn't this funny? Where the easy thing to do would be to be like, haha, and not say anything and just kind of turn away. the brave, courageous thing to do would be to say, hey, I actually don't find that funny, but we certainly don't need to get into it. I'd appreciate it if you just didn't show me stuff like that. Hey, are you going to be on the stage later? Did you run that scene with so-and-so? Like, just changing the subject. Because that's the other thing that we don't realize is speaking up doesn't always have to be a giant conversation. Similarly to the situation with my brother around guns. It was enough for me to say, I don't share that opinion, but this is not the time to get into it, right? Somebody says something offensive in a meeting or on a podcast, right? Like, even those situations, if you host your own show, to say like, I don't see it that same way, but I can respect that that's your perspective. So talk to me about this, right? Like, it's important for me to not appear complicit around things that really are of merit to me, that really matter to me. But there are other situations, like, for example, social media. I won't fight with anybody on social media. I will not, you know, unless somebody is sliding into my DMs, talking to me about something specific, and they are being articulate and respectful, then I'll communicate with you. But just shit that I don't agree with, or I'm not going to fight with people like that. That's not an effective communication. So that is sort of the barometer that I use. The other piece is to kind of fold back to what we were talking about before. Does that person have any idea that you have a problem with what they're talking about? Have you given them the opportunity to be what you need? And so much of the time, we just want to blame and be like, oh, my uncle is so toxic, or he's so racist, or what. But you're not saying anything to be like, hey, did you not get the memo? That's not acceptable anymore. Please don't speak like that in front of me. And, or if you continue to speak like that, I'm going to need to leave or hang up the phone or take our kids and go or whatever. So I think that it's important that you recognize what are the battles that really do matter to me. And for me, not allowing my silence to make me a liar keeps me pretty honest.
And I like how in the examples you've just given, you haven't actually entered into the debate. It isn't like, and this is my view, and equally trying to impose your view on somebody else, but instead just saying, I don't subscribe to this. This isn't how I want to get into a conversation. Just leave me out of it, or please don't talk to me about this again. And I think, you know, when you're talking about situations where you actually want someone to do something, like you gave an example earlier about asking an adult child to leave home, or you know, asking your mother to behave differently around you, or stop getting on your case, or your in-laws to stop telling you what to do with your children, or whatever the examples might be. How do you actually now turn that into a situation where you are influencing somebody else to behave differently in your life? And not tell you. I mean, it could be the good example as well is a lot of people in our generation are taking care of both children and aging parents. And this idea of dividing that between the siblings and who's going to do what. And, you know, you gave a great example of, you know, tending to your father, and this stuff comes up all the time. So how do you go, I'm no longer available for this. You guys have got to step in, or you guys have got to leave me alone, or whatever it is.
Yeah. So this is a boundary conversation, because you can do multiple different approaches. So you can do things like, it's sort of the, here's what I've been learning. I thought of you, and I thought you might really love this book or this whatever. But you also have to recognize that if you have totally different perspectives about something, like parenting, or, you know, the care that your parents should receive from, you know, you and your sibling really differ, it may not be about convincing them to see it your way, but rather having a really stoic stance. And that really is a boundary conversation. So I'll give you an example with my own mom. So we have very opposite beliefs, both spiritually and politically, but she would routinely invite me to church and things like that. And so here's how the conversation went. I said, hey, listen, I know you're coming from a really great place. I know her intention is not, I really want to hurt Amy and I really want to make this difficult for her. She has a very stringent belief system that has her only seeing things in as one possible way. So I want to respect that while also respecting myself. So I said to her, you know, I can imagine that that must be so incredibly difficult that your three children have opted out of the faith traditions that you wanted to have in your family. I imagine that that is really, really difficult. But here's what I also need you to know. I want to respect your faith and your beliefs, and I really want the same in return. I don't ask you to come to summer solstice or ask you to burn sage with me or do rune readings. And I do that because I know that that's highly offensive to you, and I would really like the same in return. So here's my specific request. And this is also a big piece of boundaries is specificity, is saying, I would really appreciate it if you would refrain from inviting me to any faith-based functions, if you would refrain from sending me any sort of links, materials, like being really explicit, please don't buy me stuff, don't invite me. And I said, here's my commitment to you. If I ever change my perspective, you will be the first person to know. And she didn't like it. She doesn't have to, right? She doesn't have to. But I, again, if I have to choose between making her happy or making me happy, I'm going to choose me. But I'm also going to show up in a way that I'm proud of how I behaved. And that's another little hack that you can use is, you know, if I know I'm going to have a difficult conversation with you, Joe, today on a Thursday, I might ask myself, okay, come tomorrow, come Friday morning, how do I want to feel about the woman I was? Not, did I get them to see it my way? Did I win? Was I right? Not that. It's, what do I need to do? How do I need to, and what do I need to embody to show up in a way that I can walk away saying, I'm proud of how I conducted myself? And for me, it's usually a hybrid of assertiveness and then kindness. You know, having that grace, that kindness, but also not bending. And that's the combination that I think we have never been taught. You know, where on earth would we have learned this? Nowhere is the answer.
Yeah, that's a fantastic answer. It's like this idea that we can actually have difficult conversations without it being confrontational. And I know in my own experience, one of the things that stops me having certain conversations is I'm actually really scared of confrontation, which surprises people no end. People always say to me, but what are you talking about? You're so outspoken. You're so confident. You always just say it how it is. I'm like, yeah, but if somebody comes at me in a very confrontational way, I get like shaky. I really want to hide from having an aggressive conversation, and I quickly lose my nerve and I don't want to get into it when I feel like it looks like confrontation, which I have to say, fortunately, is a very rare occurrence.
Yeah.
But I should imagine that some of that is because I probably sense when something might be like that and not enter into that circumstance as well. I mean, do you find that quite common? Because you mentioned that high achievers, right at the beginning, you said, you know, high achievers often are doing elements of people pleasing without even realizing. And I know that, you know, I didn't really go, oh yeah, I'm a people pleaser. I've got lots of limiting beliefs. That isn't one that I would have given myself that label of. Sure. But it does sound like many people are kind of walking around hiding from really kind of living in their truth and their integrity because it's scary to think that somebody might not like you, somebody might say mean things or hurtful things towards you. So how do you kind of regulate to get to the position that, you know, we talked about what to say and you talked about when to make judgments about when's the right time to speak. But now how do you kind of galvanize yourself and settle your nerves, your energy, in order to be ready to take that bold, unapologetic step?
So many great things here, Joe. First off, let me give you a hack if someone does come at you. So the what you want is you want some stock phrases that you can literally act out in front of your mirror, like rehearse them as though you were going to perform them. So one of them that I use that I was talking about earlier is, I don't share that opinion, but we certainly don't need to get into that right now. I don't share that opinion, but we, right? Like being able to have that on the ready. If someone's coming at you, I love having just one like, wow, I was not expecting that. Some sort of phrase that's like, wow, you really caught me off guard. Something where you're acknowledging, holy shit, I was not ready for this, right? And then ask for what you need. So you can formulate this however you want, but to say, wow, I was really not expecting that. I'm going to need probably like 30 minutes to kind of think about this before we jump in, or I'm not fully ready to have this conversation. I really would like to table this until tomorrow or until, right? Like you get to opt out just as much, like if someone's coming at you. So just know our response, our natural response is going to be one of defense. Again, fight, flight, freeze, fawn. But if you have an awareness about that ahead of time, or you have any sorts of heads up, like, oh, my boss just got their ass handed to them, they're probably going to come down on me, or if you have any type of heads up, it's great. We don't always get that. So that's why it's good to have stock statements like, oh, I'm really taken off guard right now. I'm going to need a little bit more time before I jump into this and give it what it deserves. Okay. The next thing that I would highly suggest that you do is to write out what you want to say. And one of the formulas that I use is, here's the situation. Like, here's what happened. Here's my interpretation. And then here's my request. So it kind of follows that rhythm. So I would write that out first. Here's the situation, the issue, the circumstance. Here's what happened. Here's how I interpreted the situation. And here's my request. Because how you interpret it, that's again, instead of saying you do this, you always you this, and you're saying, hey, listen, when things don't happen around the house the way that we've agreed. So instead of saying when you, when things don't happen around the house the way that we've already agreed on, what happens for me is, or the way I interpret that is, or what I make up in my head is, and that's what I'm feeling. You're talking about your experience. So you're discussing the impact rather than this is fact, this is what happened. And then you make your request. So what I would love to see is, would you be up for fill in the blank? And then asking for something very, very specific. So writing that out ahead of time and then going into the conversation and acknowledge your emotions and say like, this is really uncomfortable, isn't it? You know, or like, I'll be honest, I'm freaking out a little bit right now, but I care about this relationship enough that I really want to be authentic with you, or I want to be honest with you.
I love that.
So just call it out. Like, hey, listen, I know every time we've talked about this in the past, things have gotten really heated, but you mean a lot to me, or this relationship means a lot to me. And I know it might sound silly, but I wrote everything down because I really wanted to get it right. So if you're talking about it through the framework of, I care so much about this relationship that I wanted to speak to you in a way that you deserved. I wanted to be clear. I didn't want to get derailed. I didn't want to go down paths that we've gone in the past, you know, and I had a friend who every time we would have really difficult conversations, she would say, it means so much to me that you care enough about our relationship to have these really difficult conversations. And that was really true, because if I didn't, I would be like, that's not even worth the effort. And there are some situations that that's the case, where you don't care about preserving the marriage. You don't care about preserving the business partnership. It doesn't matter to you. And that's okay too, right? But that takes introspection and being really honest about, would I want to see this relationship grow and flourish? And am I just choosing to make it their problem? Because we do that a lot too. We would rather label everybody else toxic I'm like, are they toxic or have you not expressed what you actually need? You know, have you really given them the opportunity, and have you done so in a way where you can actually be heard, not yelling and screaming, not being passive aggressive, not hoping that they infer something from your behavior? Have you very clearly spelled out, these are the things that I need? The other thing that I'll say, kind of from a spiritual perspective, is that when I'm talking to people about boundaries, speaking up, tough conversations, it's not some arbitrary personal development exercise. It is because every time you silence yourself and you choose that that person's opinions, wants, and stances are more important than your own, you are sending a subconscious message to your mind over and over and over again that I don't matter as much as that other person. And that is directly related to your self-worth. So again, it's not this arbitrary personal development exercise. It's quite literally because your self-worth depends on it. So keeping that in mind of, I'm doing this scary thing, I'm having this courageous conversation because I'm proving to myself that I matter, that I am worthy, and that I am enough.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's like, from an energy perspective, when you're holding something in and you're not being honest with yourself and you're not creating your own boundaries, energetically you're going to stay stuck. And, you know, use that analogy of this idea, if the relationship is over, you might not care enough, but you may be using that as an excuse to not have the difficult conversation that might be as simple as, I'm not going to be talking about this anymore, this is over for me. And are holding that energy, that means that our boundaries are blurred. So I love the fact that there's that invitation to have difficult conversations. And the way you've described it is, well, I mean, it's just making things feel so much easier. And if somebody's listening in, tuning in today and is thinking, whoa, Amy's just hit the nail on the head for me, and I really need to get a grip on more of this, what's something as a piece of inspired action that we could think of doing today to just start taking a step forward and making these changes?
That is a great question. I would say, sit down with a piece of paper and do a journal prompt around, I would put at the top, do not allow your silence to make you a liar. And then I would journal around, are there any situations where I am incredibly emotionally triggered? Meaning I get really upset, I get really frustrated, I'm overwhelmed, I'm stressed. This also happens a lot with being overloaded at work, or if you're, you know, running your own show, and I have a tendency to do this myself where my team, I'm like, remind me you can take this. Remind me that you're capable, because I'm just like, I'll do it myself. I'll do it myself. I'll do it myself. So you have to be able to see that. So do not allow my silence to make me a liar. And then ask yourself, in what situations or with whom do I get emotionally triggered where I have not been vocal to the appropriate party? And just journal about that. And you can find the things that you complain about the most. There's usually an opportunity for a boundary. So I would, first we have to shine light on, where do we need to be vocal and what matters to us? And another kind of key here is, if something stays with you for longer than a day, like if you can't sleep it off, it's bothering you. You're like, there's probably something, and it'll fizzle out. If you don't say anything, it'll kind of fizzle out, but it will come right back the next time any situation like that it arises again. So I think we need to really heighten the awareness on where your opportunities are. And then I would start formulating some of the tips that we talked about as far as engaging in a conversation. But let's just start there.
Thanks so much, Amy. And where can we find out more about your work, more about you online?
Yeah. So my corner of the internet is amygreensmith.com. And I say that all three names are spelled the basic bitch way, nothing fancy, just Amy Greensmith. And there's tons of freebies over there. I've got a back catalog of almost 500 episodes on my pod, a free workbook that I highly suggest you get your hands on, some free hypnosis. And like any self-respecting Gen Xer, I hang out the most on Instagram. You can find me under the handle Hey Amy Green Smith. And I use that handle pretty much all across social. But come hang out and grab some freebies.
Thanks so much, Amy. This has been an amazing conversation. I'm so pleased you came on Goals with Soul.
Oh, I am too. Thank you so much.
My thanks to Amy for sharing her wisdom, and you can find all her links in the show notes. And I particularly love how closely aligned the idea of overcoming people-pleasing is with showing up with boundaries in your own coaching business. Developing boundaries and having difficult conversations with clients is part of creating that energetic foundation for your business that allows you to attract those elevated clients you most want to work with. And if you want to fill your coaching books with the clients you most want to work with by using messaging that connects and resonates with them and marketing that feels great, I've just opened up 2 spots this month for Messaging Magic Intensives. This is right for you if you are a coach or healer who wants to articulate the value of your unique brilliance and wants it done in a day. Simply send me the word magic over on Instagram at iamjo.ingram and I'll share the details. And so have an inspired action week. Take care. Bye now.